What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Bree McCoy. Now, Bree calls herself an accidental home cook, and through finding cooking, a love for cooking and a love for community, she started a blog and has become an author and now has like this really cool following on Instagram. It's really cool. You've got to go check her out. She is a follow on Instagram. And today I have her on and we just talk about community. And I feel maybe a little weird about talking about community right now, where community doesn't seem reachable for many of us. And it's just, community is really hard. Frankly, I'm having a hard time with community, and just reaching out to people feels hard. And so I think this is a very timely and important episode to talk about community, the need for community, and what community really is. We talk about the depth and the struggling with others through community, the joy of community. And I think through this entire episode, I just want it to be an encouragement to you to seek people out, to seek out community, to seek out others, even when it's hard. We need that. We're built for that. And so I hope this episode encourages you. We also talk a little bit about politics and some things that Bree has done with her following on Instagram. We also talk cocktails, which is just so much fun. Just how she develops cocktails. She has a guide for making your own cocktails. Y'all, there's just a lot of really good stuff in here, and I hope it's encouraging, and I hope you're built up by this episode. Before we get to the episode, I just want to remind you to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle. You can also follow me on Twitter at Curry Blanford. I also have a YouTube channel out called Bootleg Bible College, which just goes through the basics of Bible and theology. So I encourage you to check that out. You can find all that in my socials under my links and, you know, all the things. So yeah, check all that out for me. And I really hope you enjoy hearing from Bree. All right. Well, Bree, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and chatting with me a little bit. It's super fun to connect.
Yes. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this conversation.
I love it. Okay. So let's just start off by having you sort of introduce yourself a little bit to everybody.
Absolutely. I'm Bree McCoy. I am an accidental home cook turned food blogger, and I ended up writing a book on food called Come and Eat, a celebration of love and grace around the everyday table.
I love it. Yeah, food. I mean, this is I'm very excited to talk about food. I haven't interviewed anybody about food in a long time. I would love to hear this story of why you're an accidental home cook.
So I grew up in a family with a mom who loved to cook. Her mom loved to cook. My aunts loved to cook. Everybody liked to cook. And I never wanted to have anything to do with it. I was always like, I am the girl that will clean the dishes. I will load the dishwasher. But like, I don't want to cook at all. And that continued all the way up into college. In college, it was like always, you know, the dollar Big Mac at McDonald's. Like, it was like, I'm doing like all the fast food. I'm not, right. I don't have a kitchen I'm using. And then when I got married, my husband kind of was like, hey, we are spending so much money on food. And I was like, I know, it's so great. And he was like, well, actually, like, we probably want to spend our money on other things. Like, let's figure this out. Let's see if we can learn to cook, because he didn't really know how to cook. I didn't really know how to cook. So we were going to learn to cook together. It made a little bit more sense for me because I worked from home. And so I would just like go straight to the kitchen, and I started cooking. I burnt so many meals. I had no idea what I was doing. But I ended up over time really loving the ritual of bringing a meal together and then feeding people. And as we had people over, our friends started asking like for the recipes. And so then I was like, I'll start a food blog. That's what you do, right? So that's kind of how that kicked off.
I love it. I resonate with that in a lot of ways. My wife was very similar to you. And when we got married, she realized she couldn't just feed me Golden Grahams every night for dinner, like, or that we couldn't just eat cereal like all the time. So she learned to cook and found love. I also cook. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I just,
oh yeah,
she's the only one cooking. But we ended up starting a food blog back in the day. And so we ran a food blog for like a couple of years, and it like, it's hard, I guess. We found it to be very hard, I guess.
Very difficult. I think people don't realize. And I mean, why would someone know? Yeah. When I started my food blog, I was like, so easy. Take a photo of food, put recipe up. And then you realize, like, oh, you need to test the recipe. You need to, like, the photo thing is a whole thing.
Oh, it's a whole thing.
It is a whole thing. It's the lighting. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it like building that brand for you?
Wow. It has been a roller coaster, because when I started the food blog, it was actually a paleo food blog, because right. Jeremy and I were kind of like in that, we were in a community that was all doing paleo. So I was like, I can make paleo food, but I want it to be delicious. I wanted people to come eat at our home and not even realize it was paleo. Like, I just wanted them to eat good food.
Right.
And so I started with that. And then that really took off the first year, because that was when, like, no one really knew what paleo was. Right. People were calling it like paleo. It was just very interesting. So people were, as they started learning about it, they were finding my blog. But then maybe about a year or two in, I realized, like, I don't really care what kind of food people are cooking. I just want them to feed people and, like, feel like confident in the kitchen. And so I kind of like, and Jeremy and I also were like, this paleo thing is fun, but we're done with that.
Okay.
We don't have food restrictions.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not like, so we still like eating healthy, but we love food. So like, I love butter. I love heavy cream. And so I moved more into like, okay, I'm going to create recipes with like real food. And as I was doing that, that's when an agent came along. And then I was like, I mean, I didn't even have a book like on the horizon.
Right.
And so she was like, what kind of book would you like to write? I was like, I guess one on food. Because that's what I'm doing.
I love it. That's awesome. Okay. I knew the paleo thing. I've been paleo for about 4 years. And when I say paleo, I mean, we do butter, you know, sort of a modified paleo, but I do, yes. Like, I had asthma and ended up having to go paleo for that. So
it
I appreciate
good.
The paleo-ness, you know?
Yes. So. There can be delicious food.
There can
be. Like really delicious food.
I do a lot of barbecue these days. I've got a smoker. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Oh yeah. I built a smoker, actually. I figured you would appreciate
what?
That. So
that's
what did
amazing.
I just made burned ends the other night, bacon wrapped pork tenderloin. Pretty legit. So
that sounds so good. I am officially hungry.
Sorry about that. I love it. That's good stuff. So, okay, let's maybe walk down the path of your Christianity now, if we can.
Yeah.
Do you mind just talking about what that looked like?
Yes. So I grew up in a home. My parents are Christian, but we actually didn't go to church too much when we were younger, much younger. Like I remember my parents gathering us around and like reading the Bible to us on Sundays. And I really cherished that time. That was really like, it was just, you know, family and being there with my parents. And then I started going to youth group in high school and I was like the quintessential Jesus freak. I was like, everybody must be evangelized. Like if you came up to me in high school and asked me a question, like, how's your day going? I would be like, do you know who Jesus is? It was aggressive.
I love it.
I remember like when AOL came around and there was like chat rooms and my friends would be like getting on chat rooms to just, you know, talk to other high school people or whatever. And I was getting on chat rooms, like evangelizing, like, hi, do you know who Jesus is?
For real?
Yeah, it was not great. It was not like, I remember clearly there was one person I was talking to. She was like in high school in Missouri or something. And she's like, I haven't been sleeping well. And I just remember being like, well, maybe it's because you don't know Jesus. It was so bad. It was so, so bad. Like, I was like, Jesus is our peace and our comfort. Mm. And she was like, I'm out of here. Anyway, that's just where I was in my journey. Like, I was just like, I have received this love and everyone must receive this love. And I didn't really know how to go about, you know,
yeah.
respectfully.
Sure.
telling people about Jesus. And then through college, it was kind of the same way. Except that I think something I realized in college was the importance of the relationship and like, you need to have a relationship with someone and you need to have them invite you into their life instead of just like shoving theology down their throat. And so that became really important to me. And I would say it was even more amplified after I got married. My husband's in the military. And so we move every like 3 to 4 years. We're having to like set up base camp all over again. And I just realized like, I'm going to bring people into my home. I'm going to feed them and we're going to love on them the best we can. And that's all I care about. And, you know, my hope would be that they would sense that, you know, we love Jesus or ask if they want to ask, but otherwise I'm definitely not in chat rooms trying to evangelize people anymore.
Well, that's good. I appreciate that. I mean, you know, it's high school. We all do crazy stuff in high school. Crazy. So, you know, it is what it is. So, it's good. Okay. Well, let's talk about that then. I mean, okay. Let's go down the road of like, why food? Like what does it mean to like bring people? Yeah. Well, why food? How's that?
I would say we had been asked by our pastor early on in our marriage to host a small group. And we had been meeting with this small group for maybe, a month or so. And there was like nothing happening. We were in this small group. And after meeting several times, we just were like, I was like, I know what their favorite color is. I know like how they talk about the weather, but nothing else. And so Jeremy and I were like, maybe there is some power in like actually feeding people. And so we decided, we sent out an email and we said, hey, from now on, we're eating dinner. When you come, you don't have to bring anything. We will have the dinner ready to go. We're going to set up the table and we're going to do Bible study. And so we started doing that. And within the first meeting, we had several people open up. Like one person was actively going through a divorce. We had been meeting. We had been like, this was our seventh time meeting and we had no idea that this person. And then another person was dealing with like infertility issues. And it was just like, how has this not come up in all of our meetings? And after they left, we just realized there's something that's so vulnerable about the act of eating in front of one another that I think that once you can break through that, it just opens the door for us to share in that experience and be vulnerable even more with each other.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, because you're right. I mean, food just brings people together. I mean, it always has. It's just a natural part of us. Makes me think of the Eucharist, actually, like the you know, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So powerful.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we come together around a meal, you know, and I think there's a lot to that. But how do you facilitate, like, I don't know, community in that setting? What do y'all do to like sort of bring people together?
So we, one of our principles, which we have a unique situation in that we are moving every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we found is really important for us is for us to go first. I think as someone who's new in a neighborhood, it is easy to be like, I'm going to wait for the neighbor to bring me a welcome basket or like welcome to the neighborhood cookies. And that does not happen that much anymore.
Like, it's true.
In some of our homes, we wait a long time and we never got that basket. And so we were like, you know what? The first thing that's important to us is we go first. So we'll go knock on the neighbor's door and we'll start small. Like it can be intimidating for someone who doesn't know, you know, for a stranger to be like, come and have a delicious, bountiful meal with me.
Right.
We'll start small and be like, hey, we're having like cheese and a cheese board on our patio right after work. Come on over. Or, hey, I'm going to like have coffee at 2 p.m. If you're at home, like want to come over and let's have coffee together. So we go first, we start small. And then the hope obviously is to get to a place where we bring them to a meal and there's like comfortability there. And we make it community in that, like, I like to have something for the people to do when they come over. So they're not like awkwardly standing there. So maybe I like purposely won't slice something or like, okay, we need these tomatoes sliced. Here, you can slice these tomatoes. Or here, can you set the table? So it's that kind of breaks into a flow of being together. So those have been some really important things for us.
Yeah, that's interesting. Even participating in the meal preparation facilitates that conversation, right? That's good. Because a lot of times we'll have people over and like, we're still cooking and then they're just like standing like by us just watching us cook. And then it's like, oh, geez, we have to keep, you know, bringing up stuff like, you know.
Yes.
That's good. That's a great.
It can be distracting.
Yeah. For sure. It's interesting. So we've been in the opposite position, like sort of have, you know, I went to grad school, you know, away from home. We sort of stayed here because we found a job. And like our community has just been here for the last, you know, 11, 12 years, you know. And that community building is different than your situation where you're constantly having to rebuild community. Can you talk about what it is to like have to do that?
Yes, it is challenging. I do know one of the sacrifices of being a military wife is that I, in most cases, will never have like super deep roots. I'm not going to have like my kids grow up next to my neighbor's kids, right, or things like that. And so that's something that I've acknowledged is like, this is a sacrifice, which is interesting because I've had a lot of friends reach out to me and say, it feels like a sacrifice to be in the same place my whole life. You know, like, so I think we all feel some of that. Yeah. Like there are good and bad things of always moving. There are good and bad things of like having to stay in the same place. But I would say that something that has helped me or has enriched my life with moving so much and having to restart with community is it's given me more compassion for my neighbors because we've been in so many different areas and just like seeing the different things that people struggle with in different parts of America and really being able to like lean into that community. It never looks like what we want it to look like. It's never ideal. Like it's always messy, but just saying, you know what? We are only here for 3 years. We are going to dig as deep as we can in this time. And every single place we've left, we're still great friends with those people. We visit them. They truly have become a family to us. We just aren't next door to them anymore.
Yeah. It's interesting. You talk about messy. I think we found that community is messy. Like when you're doing it right, it's really messy and it's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
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 And I think a lot of Christians, and I'm just speaking for myself here, I guess. I've noticed that a lot of Christians would rather just not deal with that and so never really enter into community. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yes. I think that there is this concept or this thought that like community is all breaking bread and right. laughing around the table and, you know, sending brownies once in a while. And something that we've definitely found is it is so messy. It's especially messy in this current climate that we are in.
Yes.
Like this political climate. It's like,
yeah,
we really have had to lead in and say, we're bringing people to our table, even though we definitely do not see eye to eye. Or how do we bring people to our table, even though we have had completely different life experiences? And it is extremely, extremely messy and heartbreaking, but it's also very rich. And I've seen more Jesus love in my own life because of it.
That's good. Yeah. I think that's an aspect of community we don't talk about enough. Like there's a vulnerability to being in community, right?
Oh yeah. It is. If you aren't having vulnerability hangovers sometimes in your community, like maybe try to open up a little bit more. It is very scary, but I think that something that God has ordained and like created is that we are in relationship with each other. So we don't feel so isolated. So we don't feel so alone. And so a big aspect of that is being vulnerable and saying like, I'm going to share this with these friends of ours because I need someone to come alongside me, or I'm hoping that I'm not the only one. And almost always you are never the only one. I don't think I've ever shared something and been like, oh wow, I am the only one. It's always been like, oh yeah, I've been there, or I've struggled with that. And then there's like, Satan has so little ground once you realize you are not alone in it.
Yeah. Cause that's a big lie, right? Like you're the only one dealing with this. This is a you thing. Yes. Yeah. There's an extreme loneliness to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
How do you keep like jumping into the mess? Like, what is that? Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm asking, but I just want to encourage people that like, it's okay, I guess, you know, to be messy.
It is so okay to be messy. I think something that has been really helpful for me is obviously like being a thoughtful listener and being in a position of quick to forgiveness. Like I have had some very messy conversations in 2020. Like I have hurt people with my passion in certain issues. And just being willing to like, I think something that I realized is like, I am going to hurt this person. This person is going to hurt me. And like, it's not like you hurt me, I hurt you, we're done here. That's not how relationship works. Like relationship is like, you're moving forward together. So it's me saying like, I need you to apologize because when you said this, this is what I heard and it was hurtful. And for the other person saying the same thing to me and for me being willing to say, I'm so sorry. Like that is definitely not, I was not trying to communicate that you're dumb or that you like live in a hole or whatever it is. And so it's willing to say like that you have been hurt and it's willing to say, I need you to know that you've hurt me.
Yeah. But I think living that way takes like doing your own sort of like internal work, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
So if I may ask, like what does that look like for you sort of processing your own, like, you know, your own vulnerabilities, your own struggles?
Yeah. I think that, the Enneagram has obviously helped me a lot.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's go Enneagram. I love
like, it really, really has helped me. Something that I know about myself is I am a 7 and I have a very feisty 8 wing, like okay. Real strong side for justice. I used to work for Compassion International and that wing got flexed so much. So something that I know about myself is when I am talking about something that I have like a deep passion for, especially if it comes to injustice, I will come across as, I can come across as like maybe demeaning the person because I'm just so passionate and I'm just sure. So like, these are the facts, this is what it is. And I have learned, thankfully, because my friends have said to me like, hey, your tone made me feel like you think I don't care about those issues, or your tone made me feel like you think that I am okay with this. And so because they were vulnerable with me and shared that with me, then I was able to set and be like, okay, what is it about my tone? What was I trying to convey? Do I see why my tone could have hurt them? And that's been really super helpful. And now I kind of have like a flag up, like I know, oh gosh, we're going to talk about this. Like I'm aware of my tone. I'm aware of like things I say, like this is wrong or this is right. You know, like how does that come across versus opening up for conversation? And I think that's what's important, is that we're entering into a conversation, not necessarily always a debate.
Yeah, that's good. That Enneagram helps. Your sevenness also makes you run away from pain, right? So you don't like want to talk about anything that like might be a little painful in any way, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I definitely have, and I've definitely done that. And I've definitely had to, like have conversations with friends of just like, why are we going to talk about this? Because I feel like this is not going to go anywhere good.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid this will hurt the friendship. And I do think that there are some things where it's like, this is not healthy. Like, this is not healthy for us to have this conversation, and we acknowledge it and we're fine. And then I obviously think there are times where it's like, we need to have this conversation. We need to be talking about this.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. I mean, we keep bumping up against it. I mean, we talked about it before this started. This will definitely come out after the election, but you just recently posted something political, you know, and I just keep thinking about you, you know, your 8 wing and sort of maybe bulldozing people, and just like, what went into posting about politics for you?
Yes, that was different for me to do. And I will say that in almost any case, I probably would encourage people to have those conversations, especially something like politics, with the people in their real life, in their actual right. life, because it's yeah. very difficult, or I would hope it would be very difficult for someone to name call or yell at someone sitting at their table.
Right.
Like, you can find common ground. You can see that person's face, their tone. The reason that I decided to post about who I'm voting for was first because I actually was getting a lot of DMs of people who wanted to know who I was voting for, and from a place that was genuinely concerned, like genuinely, like, I don't know who I'm voting for.
Oh, they were wanting like advice sort of.
Yes.
People like DM'd you out of the blue asking you for voting advice.
Yes. And I think, and maybe something that could have potentially like kickstarted that is I did post an Instagram story a month or so ago, just saying like, hey, if you're an absentee voter, because I'm in the military.
Sure.
And I just wanted to give people like, hey, this is how you do it. This is how you do an absentee vote. This is where you go to request your ballot to make sure you're registered. And that's all I said. I didn't say who I'm voting for, how to vote. I just said like, we should all be voting. It's our right. And here you go. Like, this is how it's right. done. And so I think maybe from that, people were like, well, who are you voting for? And like, I think some of the DMs were general, like they were confused and they didn't know. I think other ones were like challenging me, like a little bit like, well, why don't you share who you're voting for?
Okay.
And I just didn't know what to do with it. I was very confused. I'm in a mastermind. And so I kind of went and asked, and they all also were getting DMs that were asking them the same. And we were all just kind of like, not really like our brand, but if people want to know, maybe we should say something. So we did. And it was scary and it was extremely, extremely vulnerable. And I think something, I'm not sure if a lot of people know or can understand this, but like, Instagram is my business. Like, that's where my business happens.
Right.
And so it was a business risk. It wasn't just me being like, I'm going to tell everybody who I'm voting for, because, you know, it was like, this is my business. I understand I will lose people. I understand I could lose, you know, revenue, like all of these things.
Yeah, right.
But at the end of the day, I really felt like there are people that are asking me. And so I do want to respond. And then I just feel like this election is too important. Like, I just really was like, I feel like I have a voice. I have influence. I'm gonna use it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we already talked about this, but I would love, like, how did you feel like was there a vulnerability hangover after that? How'd you feel about all that?
Well, the vulnerability hangover was quite intense. I had chosen to do video, and I just hit record once. Like, it was just like, record, let's go. I didn't realize, I knew what I was going to say generally. I didn't realize the emotion that was going to come out. And so there was some emotion there that, you know, especially as a seven, like, sevens don't cry. So
everything's fun. Everything's awesome.
Fun. Yeah. Everything's always fun and awesome. And so that was like, I have to feel very, very safe with someone to be more emotional or like tap in more to like my sorrow or my pain. And so the fact that I'm like sharing a video to 20,000 followers,
right,
where I am tapping into my struggle and my, you know, just sorry, like all the things that I struggled through, was just felt really intense. And I think that overall, the response was like, people disagreed with me, absolutely. And there was one person who like very loving, like she did such a great job of just like, I'm a longtime follower. I've learned so much from you. I love the space you've created. I don't agree with you. Like, we differ here on politics, but like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still here.
Right.
And I thought that was really great. And I think a lot of people were able to say, and that's the whole thing with like, having these conversations in person at your table, is that even if people disagreed with me, they were able to see, like, hear my tone, see my face, and know where I was coming from.
Yeah. You also shared your personal story, I think, which is a big part of that. Which I think always breaks down barriers, right? When you can share a little bit of like who you are and maybe some things that you've gone through, it disarms people.
Absolutely. I think that is really important. I think a lot of people have made certain decisions or are landing in certain places in their life, their habits, their job, the way they do life, the way they vote, because of their own life experience and their own lens. And yeah. Not everyone has that. And so once you sit down with someone and hear their story, it's in most cases very difficult to be like, I still don't understand how you've arrived where you've arrived.
Yeah.
Usually right. It's like, oh, well, I didn't know that's part of your story. And I can understand why this is why you think that this thing is important.
Right. Yeah, totally. It's interesting. We keep talking about, I'm just seeing like this juxtaposition in your life where your brand and everything you love is one-on-one. It's communal. It's face-to-face. And yet your business demands that you have the opposite of that in followers. Yeah. And I know you build a community. I love my social media community. Like you build a community there for sure. But they're just almost opposite ways of sort of operating in the world. Is that? Yeah.
Yes. Completely, completely opposite. And what's really interesting in a decision that I made with, in the beginning of blogging and Instagram, I really was like, I'm going to show people like how I gather people, like how I gather and what our gatherings look like. But what I really quickly learned from, especially from the people who were following me, was they were like, we don't really care about that. Like, we want to know how to actually cook a recipe. Can you tell us how to cook a recipe? And I was like, no, I want to show you how to gather people. But, even my book, Come and Eat, is very heavy on like, this is how and why we gather. And when that book came out, it was kind of the same response of, this is so great. I don't think there's many people who disagree that we should be gathering. Right. Like everybody was like,
the government right now does, but
I mean, in pandemic times, like,
wear your mask.
It's so sad. So I feel like, they were just like, well, we would rather you teach us how to cook a recipe. So, cause if we can cook a really delicious, yummy meal, then of course we will want to bring people over.
Right.
And so that's kind of where that split happened for me, where you will not see on my Instagram, I do not share my community at all. I rarely share the meals that we're having with our community, the people at my table. And so I've just been able to separate that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, but I appreciate so much that communal aspect to it, because I feel like a lot of times food blogging makes food an end in and of itself. You know what I mean? That like, and which is okay. It's totally fine. But I think like we cook, or at least as Christians, I think we like food is a means to deeper community with people, you know, like if you're like, hey, I'm going to cook food and I'm going to bring you over. Like there's just something to that. The people are the end goal.
Yes.
And good food brings people even faster, I think.
Yeah. Oh, faster, and they stay a little longer.
That is true.
It's so true. Well, that is something that I found right after I started realizing when Jeremy and I were bringing people over, and I was like, people are opening up about their stories. Like, people are like staying a little longer. And it was like a veil had dropped, because I had been reading my Bible, from the high school days. And as I was reading my Bible and this was happening, I was like, oh my gosh, Jesus is at a meal all the time.
Yeah.
Like I think it was the book, A Meal with Jesus by Tim Chester. I think he said in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus is either like at a meal, on the way to a meal, or coming from a meal. Mm. Like, very important. Meals are very important.
Yeah. Totally. I love that. I think that's, that's inspiring. My wife and I also do another little podcast in this feed called The Magic Table. But we've realized that our table's magic, because when you sit around it, like, time just disappears and like all the guards are just dropped, And so we've experienced that so much around our table. Like it's this beautiful, it's beautiful. It really is.
It is. Yeah. It is very, very powerful. And I'm like, I understand why God has created us to need to eat as often as we do.
Right.
Like I get it. It's a very powerful way to bring community together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Cause even our society, I think there's this type of Instagram account or whatever. There's this type of thing out there where food is just a means to like losing weight, or it's like so utilitarian, I guess.
Yes.
You know, where we eat to like just for energy or something. And I think that flies in the face of like what we've seen in society, like, you know, going back thousands of years, you know?
Yes. It's so true. It's like, what is the purpose of food for you? And I think that can change in different seasons. Like if you're a new mom, maybe you're like, I just have to eat so fast, right. Just so I can keep going. Right. I think that, you know, there's something we miss though can be that just pure enjoyment of the meal and just like, not just like, I'm just going to enjoy this meal and the people at my table. And I'm not putting any kind of like, any label on this meal. It's too fatty. It's too rich. It's too like, it was too much. It was not, it's just like, I'm just going to enjoy it without any labels.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you enjoy food without actually taking pictures of it though? Cause that was always our problem when we were food blogging. It's like, I really want to eat this, but I've got to get my lighting set up so I can get the camera set up. And yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is the actual hardest part about being a food blogger. Like there's a lot of hard things, but like Jeremy coming home and he's like hungry and I'm like, if you touch this.
I get it. I mean, you have to have the perfect plate.
Yep.
It has to be, you know, clean and like, yeah, just like everything is just so zhuzhed and stuff.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. It's people eat with their eyes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So. But more importantly than all that is the cocktails, because you make some like crazy killer cocktails. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So one of the ways that when we were living in California in Hermosa, we had been, our neighbors brought us into their community of people, which was just so amazing. And we connected with them very quickly. And we wanted to have them over for like a party basically. And there must've been like 15 people. We did not have room for 15 people, but Jeremy and I were like, well, what if we like kicked off that whole idea of like giving someone something to do or immediately making them feel comfortable when they come into your home? We were like, what if we kick it off with cocktails? Because this is a party. We didn't have a big enough table for everyone to sit down. So we weren't really going to do like a formal meal. Yeah. So we did cocktails and it was so much fun. We had like people juicing lemons, you know, people like tearing rosemary. And so we were kind of like, we ran out of lemons. It was the lemon drought of 2017 for us. everybody was like, where do we get more lemons? But it's just fun. I think it's a creative outlet for me as well. I've been doing like cooking, you know, meat and veggies for so long that being able to do this creative thing with cocktails of like, how can I bring, you know, tequila together with grapefruit so that it's like fresh but enjoyable, like all the things. I love it so much.
So for you, what are the keys to sort of crafting a cocktail? I mean, is there like sort of a pattern you follow or something like that?
Yes. I actually created a little guide called the Beginner's Bar Cart because people were like, wait, how are you doing this? And it's free. It's on my site. You can download it for free, but it goes through like, here are the tools that you like should definitely have. Here are the techniques that you should know about. And then I also break down all the different alcohols and liqueurs. Like this goes best with this. And the brands, because I think that's something that's really confusing for people. A good cocktail has good liquor in it. Like not that bottom shelf stuff.
Right.
And so I break that down. Like here's a great, like it's great quality, but it's also like great taste. And then share with people. But usually it's like I usually do 2 ounces of liquor and then generally like 1 ounce of acid. So like citrus or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then a sweetener, whether it's maple syrup or honey simple syrup or like a little bit of a sugar cube.
I love it.
If you kind of have all those elements, you're like in for a good time.
I love that stuff. We've made, I think, a few of your cocktails that you've had on there. And I have to say, I approve. So there you go.
That's
all
you need. Yeah.
It's like
that's all I need.
I love it. I love it. Such seven energy. Like, let's make a cocktail and like hang out. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, this is my creative outlet coming.
Yeah, totally.
Something I create and can drink.
Yeah. It's fun. I love that. I love that. We did touch on it, but I mean, we are living in a pandemic right now, which means that we can't kind of see people, and your life blood, it seems, is people and it's community. So how have you operated during this, like, just really like hard season for community?
Yeah, this has been especially difficult because we moved a few months before it happened.
Oh, did you really?
So we moved from California to DC, and then the pandemic happened. So we did not have the chance to find a church. We did not have a chance to, we moved into a new apartment complex. And so we didn't even have neighbors when the pandemic hit. We do now, but we're all kind of like, hello.
Yeah. You know, hi. Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, so that has been very difficult, but I think we do have, thankfully there are, two friends that live here that we knew about when we moved here. And so we've all kind of bubbled together.
Okay.
So we've been able to like gather with them. We've been able to do, you know, the creative, like outdoors, like, you know, kind of like you sit over there, we'll sit over there. Right, we're going to do that with our new neighbors in next week, I think, where we're just like, we'll go outside. I think we've definitely had to get creative for sure. But I am so willing to do that because I think it's important that we like think of the health of other people. Yeah. It is hard on me to be isolated, but it is worth it for the greater good.
Yeah, I totally agree. We struggle with the same thing. And like, yeah, even as pastors, you're like, part of what we do is like, is people. Like that's like the whole job, right? So, yeah, I think it's hard. It's hard. And I think recognizing that it's hard is like important, you know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's lonely. It's not ideal. Like you can still feel like, I know I'm doing the right thing and still be like, this is really difficult.
Yeah, totally. Right. And I think those two things, I think we have to hold those two things in tension and be okay with it and pursue the things that like make us mentally healthy at the same time. Yeah.
Yes. Get a little creative.
Yes,
have
exactly.
Those cocktail parties over Zoom or whatever.
I know. We're in Chicagoland and like, you can already just feel the cold coming. And like, we have lived on bonfires this summer, you know, and like, I know.
I know. I have mentally had to prepare for colder months coming of just like, I already don't do well when the days are shorter and colder. And so just kind of taking steps to like prepare myself.
Yes. Yes.
And like, how can I prepare myself now? And then what are healthy things that I can set up through that season? So that I can be mentally healthy as possible in these unprecedented times.
Very unprecedented.
Very unprecedented.
So what does that look like for you? What have you come up with that maybe would help with that?
Yeah. So we have booked a few Airbnb cabins throughout the next several months, especially like either over the holidays or around the holidays. And that is a change of scenery has been very helpful for me. So we actually legally can't go very far. Jeremy's in the military, so we couldn't travel even if we wanted to.
Oh yeah, that's a whole nother, the military adds a whole nother,
a whole nother level. Wow. So, but we found these cabins that are nearby. They're in areas that we really enjoy that are like, you know, more nature-esque. And so we've booked those. So I know I have those to look forward to. We've also already made plans with our friends for like how often we're going to see them, like when we're going to see them throughout the holidays, which is awesome. Like, I think something that can happen, especially in this season that's going to be dark and cold and a little lonely, is it will be easy for us to just let it happen to us. Like, we just let it, we just let the days go by. We just kind of, we wake up and now it's January 2021. Yeah. And what I really want to do is like I need to have the, I need to know when I'm seeing people. I need to know that there's like a vacation, as big of a vacation as we can have right now, on the horizon,
right.
Like planning some hikes and things like that.
Yeah. I think that's really helpful. I think that is good. Cause it really is like the first 3 months of the pandemic went so slow. It was like they were years.
Oh yes.
And now it's just like, it's just disappearing on me. I can't even believe it's, you know, middle of October or whatever. So
it's so, oh, and that's another, it went. So that's another thing we did, which I think is so helpful for us, is that we got a Peloton.
Nice.
But the reason we got a is because like I know that I'm mentally at one of my best when I can move my body.
Right.
And Bree McCoy does not move her body in cold weather. Like absolutely not. I don't care how many coats I put on. Like I don't go outside and work out. I just don't. I just don't. It's just who I am. And knowing that like our gyms are closed, or knowing that like we're going to, like, what if we have another shutdown because of how the weather is? We preempted that. And we're like, we need something in our place that will help you move your body.
Yeah.
And for us, that was a Peloton.
Yeah. It's an investment in the future, right? It's an investment in your mental health.
Exactly.
Totally. I totally get that. That's great. I love it. I really appreciate you talking about community. I don't think we like process that enough, especially as Christians. It's just like, we're so individualistic a lot of times. And
Yeah. Especially the messy part of just like, it is, if it's messy, it's actually working.
Yeah. Right.
If it's not messy, you may have set up some kind of utopia, and are you really breaking through some of the barriers in your life and in the life of the people around you?
Yeah. Not to get too deep or take us too far off track, but I feel like that so describes like the church in the 90s, you know, just this like, we're, everything's great and we're awesome. And I mean, to some extent still today, but you know, just that church growth structure. And like, I think we invested so much as Christians into making it all seem like it's all okay. And you know,
And so, we should be the first people to be like, it's really not okay. Like, I'm really not okay. I'm so not okay. I needed a savior.
Yeah, right.
You know, like,
amen.
Really not okay.
Amen.
Yeah,
totally. Totally. And so, yeah, I've just been processing a lot of that sort of stuff and why we are where we are and all of that. So I appreciate that conversation about community. I think it's really important. So,
thanks for those questions.
Oh, for sure. Okay. So Bree, where's the best place that people can sort of find you, and like, what are the best ways to connect?
I am most often, most frequently and consistently on Instagram at Bree McCoy, BRIMCKOY, spell McCoy a little differently. And from there you can find me everywhere else. Like my blog, which has all my food recipes, is oursavorylife.com. And yeah, the world is our oyster. Out of Instagram.
I love it. Yeah. Instagram's my favorite too. So, you know, agreed. Okay. So are you ready to jump into our final two questions as we wrap up here?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Oh yes. Okay. I used to work at, like in the mall pretzel shop. Ooh. Annie Ann's.
Yeah. Annie totally. Ann's. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was the worst. It was you feel like a zoo animal because they want you making the pretzels in that like glass window.
Sure.
So people are like watching you. I had like intense like stage anxiety before I would go to work, because I'm just like, people are going to be watching me fold these pretzels. Ooh. And then I always had to like close down by myself at night. And it was so messy. It's a messy shop. Like you had to like wash everything. Like, well, I would sneak my sister into the mall through the back door, and she would come and help me clean up.
Wow.
Because it was just like too much.
Wow.
I hated that job so much.
But here's the real question: how are your pretzel making skills today?
I don't know. I have not made a pretzel. I have not made a pretzel, nor have I eaten at Annie Ann's or any other pretzel location since then. I have been forever scarred.
Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, I think that's all that's important. So I think it's okay to understand that and to like be okay with that. So
yeah. Like, good. This is not okay.
That's amazing. Okay. So my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
I think you should bring them to your table. I really, really think that the best way that people can feel loved by us and seen by us is when we feed them. Yeah. And that could be inviting them out to lunch, or like going in the break room, having, you know, lunch with them, or bringing them lunch, doing something maybe fun after work, like maybe a quick happy hour, or even just, you know, the traditional, like, come and eat with me. I don't know of a faster and more rich way to show the kingdom of God and to show someone how well they are loved.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think that's awesome. And yeah, it's yeah, I love it. Good stuff. Yeah. Bree, thank you so much. It was so good to chat.
So good. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Bree McCoy, and I hope you're just feeling encouraged. I know sometimes reaching out on Zoom can just feel hard. It just doesn't feel fun, but I find that in my life, when I just reach out and I just talk to people, even if it is on Zoom, it's way better than I think it's going to be. And so I just encourage you to reach out, find somebody to talk to, find somebody to hang out with, even via Zoom, maybe with a cocktail in hand, and just enjoy some community. It's still so necessary. And even right now, maybe even more so. So I hope you're feeling encouraged. Right now is a great time to go to the bottom of your iTunes app, and you can leave a rating and review for me there. Just helps get the word out about the podcast, and I love to know you're listening and enjoying. So I would appreciate you doing that. And until next time, get out there and hustle.